Amy Chua joins us for the next hour of Midday. A few years ago, the Yale Law professor attained national prominence with the publication of her controversial memoir, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, which held that strict parenting produces the most successful children. Now the Tiger Mom and her husband, Jeb Rubenfeld, survey American society for examples of success among cultural and ethnic groups, all to answer the question, why some are more apt to succeed in life than others. They share their thoughts on Jewish Americans, Indian Americans, Iranian, Lebanese, and Chinese Americans, as well as the growing numbers of Mormons who become corporate leaders. Amy Chua and Jeb Rubenfeld on what drives success, the three traits common to people who make the most of American opportunity. That's next on Midday. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. Mormons, Jews, Chinese Americans, Cuban Americans, Lebanese, Nigerian, Indian, and Iranian Americans. Our guests this hour say these eight populations have one thing in common, success. That is, they are high achievers who do strikingly better than Americans overall. In a new book, The Triple Package, How Three Unlikely Traits Explain the Rise and Fall of Cultural Groups in America, Amy Chua and her husband, Jed Rubenfeld, attempt to explain why certain ethnic, religious, and cultural groups do better than others. They identify three attributes that they say separate the best from the rest: a healthy superiority complex, plus feelings of insecurity, plus impulse control or self-discipline. Taken together, these traits comprise what Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld have termed the triple package. Take, for instance, Jewish Americans. Although they make up only about 2% of the U.S. population, they account for a third of the Supreme Court, more than two-thirds of Tony Award-winning lyricists and composers, and about one-third of American Nobel laureates. Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld assert that it's the triple package that has allowed Jewish Americans to achieve such heights. Now, if this sounds like controversial territory to you, that's because it is, which Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld acknowledge. In a New York Times piece previewing their book this past winter, Amy and Jed wrote, "Merely stating the fact that certain groups do better than others, as measured by income, test scores, and so on, is enough to provoke a firestorm in America today, and even charges of racism. The irony is that the facts actually debunk racial stereotypes." We'll talk about that during this hour. Today on the show, we'll get into some of those the facts that they address in the book and use in the book and the theories expressed in the triple package. And we'll look at some of the larger questions that the topics of cultural identity and socioeconomic status raise. And as I mentioned earlier, Amy Chua and her husband, Jed Rubenfeld, they're Yale Law School professors both. They're also authors. You know Amy Chua's name already. She's well known for her 2011 memoir, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. The book extols the strict parenting style of the Chinese over their Western counterparts. Amy Chua and that subject became a sensation, first in the media and then in coffee shops and at kitchen tables across the country. People are still talking about it. Jed Rubenfeld is the Robert R. Slaughter Professor of Law at Yale. He's an expert on constitutional law, privacy, and the First Amendment. He's also the author of two successful novels. But here he is with Amy, his wife. Their book together is The Triple Package, How Three Unlikely Traits Explain the Rise and Fall of Cultural Groups in America. It's published by the Penguin Press. Nice to have you both on the show, Amy and Jed.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Yeah. You know, this is a really interesting subject area. This is, I was reflecting on this and thinking about it. This is the kind of a subject that people will find maybe politically incorrect, certainly controversial, very sensitive. It's a subject that makes people nervous, I think. But it's something people do talk about. They talk about it amongst themselves, among friends, among family. It's what we wonder about. What got you to this project and the project together, Amy or Jed, either one of you? What brought you to this?
Well, I think you have it just right. I mean, these are issues that everybody, you know, in the privacy of their own home or at dinner parties, they wonder about. And we actually started noticing changes in our Yale Law School student population. You know, about 5 years ago, we noticed, wow, you know, in a class of 16, there are 3 Mormon students in here. Is this something new? We saw a sudden, very large number of, you know, Indian American students. So that's kind of initially what got us interested. We thought, look, is this just kind of a weird thing at Yale, or does this reflect a larger pattern? And we hired a, you know, put together a huge team of research assistants and dug in and discovered that there are striking patterns across the country. But Dan, I really want to stress that if you look at some of the reviews now, people who've actually read the book, some people say, you know, this book is actually very politically correct. Because if you read the book, you realize we're not saying that these are 8 better groups. Or even when we say more successful, we're talking about a snapshot in time. That's why the book is about the rise and fall of groups. It's that at any given point in time, certain groups seem to be more motivated and more driven, and we wanted to explore why. But we noticed that, for example, with Asian Americans, while Asian Americans do so well academically, their SAT scores are about 140 points above the national median. Once you get to the third generation of Asian Americans, their kids perform no better academically than the rest of the country. So it's nothing permanent. It's nothing innately better about these groups. It's something related to maybe, you know, I think the insecurity of being an immigrant or an outsider that creates this drive.
Oh, I want to talk about insecurity and also the superiority conflict, the superiority complex, the two things that I find in contradiction a bit, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Jed, I'll go to you then. This is sort of a classic American story about immigrants, though, isn't it? We said this of Italian Americans, Jewish Americans, Polish Americans. They came over, you know, to Ellis Island, very poor. This goes back to the 19th century, you know, and then the idea was for their kids to do better, to push their kids to do better, to get educated. And then that carried on for another generation. So are all these stories, and I guess the Mormons wouldn't be included in that, but most of these stories seem to be about immigrants.
Well, that's exactly right, Dan. So, yeah, first of all, Mormons don't fit in there. So there's something very interesting going on with that. And we think that our explanation can capture both the immigrant success stories and the Mormon. But basically, the point you're making is the point we're making. You can go back 100 years in America, and one immigrant group after another succeeds in this impressive, remarkable way, and the story is so often the same. And you could go back and find 100 years ago it was Irish and Italians. Today it's the groups we're looking at, but as Amy says, this is a snapshot in time. But point is, there's a very predictable arc where the second generation succeeds the most, and then you find decline and dissipation of success in the third generation. Now, this is an extremely interesting phenomenon. Amy mentioned that third-generation Asian Americans don't perform academically better than the rest of the country, which proves right there it's not racial, it's not genetic, it's not IQ. Something going on in the cultures of those first and second-generation families. The question is, how are they transmitting it? I mean, even if you imagine that, you know, some kind of that the immigrants coming over are different, and we should talk about that, you know, the extent to which immigrant selection factors can play a role here. The question is transmission mechanism. How do they get this, their kids to perform so much better? Because folks have looked at, like, East Asian Americans right now, the Chinese, Vietnamese, Koreans, and this is a large population. Some do come over with higher education and skills, but over half do not. And that over half, they're coming over poor, poorly educated, and yet study after study shows, and this is in New York, LA, also in Toronto in the UK, shows that their kids are outperforming the children of better educated, wealthier white parents. That's the phenomenon we're looking at. Because, Dan, if we could understand how these working class kids, I mean, they're the sons and daughters of garment workers and dry cleaners. If we could understand how they are experiencing so much upward mobility, because they're going off to great colleges and professional success, so much upward mobility when the rest of the country isn't, we might be in a position to transform the way this country approaches poverty and inequality.
Amy, that second or the third, by the time you get to the third generation, I'm curious about this. Do we become too Americanized? Is that the problem? I mean, the idea is to become Americanized, right? To do away with the hyphen and just become an American citizen. consider yourself an American, but we get soft by the third generation because we've become too American?
Well, you know, the book is actually, you know, I think that that's part of what generates the dynamism in America. And we try to bring this out. It's not just, oh, the immigrants are the best ones, you know, because immigrants also tend to be very narrow in what they count as success. And this is often because they come over from, you know, they're really afraid that they can't survive in this country. So immigrants often, this is true of my own parents, they want to force their kids into very stable, respectable professions. You have to be a doctor. You have to go get a PhD. But I think some of the dynamism of America comes from the subsequent generations, if you can harness some of that immigrant drive and aspiration and inspiration, but then say, you know what? This is the rebellious part of America. We don't all want to be doctors. You know, we don't want to do that. We, you know, want to play jazz. We want to make a startup. And so I don't think it's all a matter of decline. But yes, I think there's a kind of a healthy creative destruction that goes on. But I do think that this is a concern, that once any group or family or even nation gets too prosperous, too successful, you see that success contains the seeds of its own erosion. Because once you get a little bit comfortable, you lose a little bit of that insecurity. You know, you lose that hunger. You're not afraid you can't survive. So you work a little less, a little less impulse control, and that too much of that's not good either.
Well, let's go over the three traits. Since you mentioned them here, this is really interesting to me. The three traits you identify in all these groups, which are a formula together for success, thus the title of your book, The Triple Package. Let's start with superiority complex. And Jeb, why don't you take that one and pick any of the groups that you examined and talk a little bit about that, because I think people will be surprised to hear to think that, well, Indian Americans, for instance, or Iranian Americans, let's say an immigrant family, that people in that family possess some sort of superiority idea about themselves, superior idea about themselves.
Okay, well, the way we're defining the superiority complex, very simple. It's a deep-seated belief in the exceptionality of your group. By the way, mm-hmm. I want to emphasize all three of these qualities are totally accessible to any individual. Some people who haven't read the book get the impression we're just talking about groups and just these eight groups. It's just not true. There are literally dozens of groups who are outperforming the national average. When we looked at the largest and most strikingly successful groups, we systematically tried to identify them. That's how we got to those eight.
I get you.
But there are lots of groups, but ultimately the qualities we identified are accessible to anybody. So you could have a superiority complex not based on ethnicity or your group membership. It could be just a sense that you got from a strong parent that you were exceptional. So there's lots of ways you can get it. But in these groups, one of the things that unites them, and, you know, we didn't expect to find this, but boy, when we started studying these groups, it really, you know, hit us in the face. They each have cultural narratives of the exceptionality of their group. And here's an example, Mormons. Mormons have a very, very strong chosen people narrative. And it's religious. It's actually borrowed from the Old Testament, from the Jewish chosen people narrative. But today in America right now, the Mormon belief is that they are placed on this earth with a special mission to lead the world to salvation, lead the country to salvation. And they believe at the same time that their way of life is morally better than what they're seeing in the rest of the country. Now, any kind of group superiority complex, I'm not singling out the Mormons here, this would apply to any group superiority complex, is dangerous. It can border on ethnocentrism. It can border on the invidious. It can be intolerant. It can be prejudiced. One of the great things about America is that it tends to wean kids from these, you know, superiority complexes. This is what we write about in the book. That's another way that America can erode these triple package complexes, and that's a great thing. But so Mormons are a very good example, and you see this right across the board. And, you know, I'll be honest, sometimes it's a little disturbing. I'm Jewish, and I think I can say that. It's difficult to talk about, but you look at some of these groups, Iranians, Cubans, they you know, they are known in their communities for having, a sense of their own exceptionality, which can sometimes seem invidious to other people. And that's just a downside, a dark side of this, of one of these triple package features.
Okay. But they make it work for them. They believe they have something to offer maybe a new society that they're stepping into, if it happens to be an immigrant situation. Now, Amy, go to insecurity for me, because this is another trait here. And, I was thinking superiority, insecurity. Those two things seem almost like a contradiction.
That's what's so interesting. How does somebody simultaneously feel insecure and superior at the same time? But a great example, Dan, is Steve Jobs, who, by the way, doesn't belong to any one of these groups, just re-emphasizing Jed's point that any individual can have the triple package. But Steve Jobs was famous for just kind of having a legendarily high opinion of his own abilities. Mm-hmm. A former girlfriend said he was narcissistic. He believed that he could change the world. At the same time, all of his closest friends always described him as deeply insecure at the same time, that he almost had a chip on the shoulder mentality. Some people think because he was an orphan, but this chip on the shoulder made him feel that really driven, that he constantly had to prove himself. He wanted to show everybody. And that's what simultaneously feeling like I really am an exceptional person, and yet no one is recognizing me. People are looking down on me. And that's what we say generates motivation and drive. And you see this at the group level. So you'll get a group like, Iranian Americans or Chinese Americans. They come from a very proud tradition. We come from a great civilization. They come to this country and they run smack into American discrimination. They're outsiders. People make fun of their accents. They, call them terrorists. So to be an immigrant of any background, from any continent, is almost by definition to be insecure. And in some ways, for me, this book is about how do some people turn that sense of being an outsider, being marginalized, being looked down on, into a source of strength. And that's where that superiority complex comes in. Hey, these people are looking down on me. I come from a proud tradition. And you could turn that ethnic heritage into almost like kind of armor against majority prejudice.
We're going to take a break here. We got through two of the traits in the triple package. We'll get to the third one, impulse control, after a break here, because I have to show a little impulse control to continue the conversation, but we need to take a break here on WYPR out of Baltimore. Our guests, Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld, husband and wife, Yale law professors and co-authors of The Triple Package, How Three Unlikely Traits Explain the Rise and Fall of Cultural Groups in America. This is Midday. A short break. We'll be right back. That insecurity should be a lever of success is another anathema in American culture. Feelings of inadequacy are cause for concern or even therapy. Parents deliberately instilling insecurity in their children is almost unthinkable, yet insecurity runs deep in every one of America's rising groups. And consciously or unconsciously, they tend to instill it in their children. This is a quoting here from our guests this hour. Their writings, this up here in the New York Times, Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld, their book now, The Triple Package, How Three Unlikely Traits Explain the Rise and Fall of Cultural Groups in America. The idea of insecurity, before we leave it, I just want to say that, that's correct. I think most people would say, how can you be successful if you have that in your belly, if you're not feeling that confidence? I understand the superiority idea that Jed explained, but that it does seem like a contradiction, but yet I can see it. I think the Steve Jobs example is very good.
Well, it's pretty interesting. For about 30 or 40 years, American education and to some extent child-rearing philosophies have been gripped by the self-esteem idea. The self-esteem idea holds that the critical thing is you got to feel good about yourself. If you feel good about yourself, then you'll be able to succeed, then you'll be a healthy person, then you'll be a better person. Now, notice that if that's your idea, you got to have high self-esteem in order to succeed, that separates self-esteem from having done anything to deserve self-esteem yet. It's, mm-hmm. It severs self-esteem from having earned it. And that's really been the a reigning philosophy in American education and to some extent among families. And, you know, it's painful to look at the data, but the data are in now. And and kids raised on that kind of self-esteem diet, and by the way, self-esteem, that's the opposite of insecurity. People raised on that self-esteem diet are doing less well. And people and psychologists have done experiments, controlled experiments, and huge tens of thousands of field studies. They're doing less well academically. They are doing less well psychologically. They have less stable relationships. They tend to be selfish. They don't hold relationships as well. It's really quite fascinating, and the data are very, very strong here. So it just looks like we have been mistaken about that. And instead, if you can combine a sense of exceptionality confidence with that dash of insecurity, no, don't feel so great about yourself. Don't think that you should just, without having done anything, feel good. You have to go out and earn it. You have to go out and prove it. And, you know, I'll stand behind this. The empirical data is there. And I think we are just a little bit off on that in this country.
Amy, I'll go to you on this. Amy Chua, the author of Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother, insecurity instilled purposely, insecurity that's innate. I mean, what is the best kind?
Well, we purposely, Dan, chose this term, insecurity. And by the way, superiority complex, you note, these are all very loaded, ambivalent, almost negative terms. And that's because we didn't want, I mean, we could have said, you know what it takes to be successful? Confidence and grit and big dreams. And probably the book wouldn't have been.
You might not have been on my show, yeah.
But I have to be honest, like everybody, if you look at really driven people, they're often not so happy, right? What if to be driven and to keep working, that sort of means that something's missing, something's pushing you. So we wanted to write a book that was honest, that, you know, kind of broke apart the inner dynamics and also addressed some of the psychological costs. And we include several chapters on the downside of the triple package. You're right, this idea that, oh, I'm not good enough yet. I need to do more. I need to prove myself. I think if you have it in the proper dose and you still feel good about yourself, you have unconditionally loving parents, that can be a great motivator. But taken to an extreme, the idea, you know, that, oh my gosh, I'm not good enough, I'm insecure, of course, it can be devastating. We quote the novelist Amy Tan, who said, you know, I grew up thinking I could never, ever, ever please my parents. It was a miserable feeling. Sometimes I just wanted to die. So we are, I think you're right. It's not, you know, this is not a simple how-to book. But I do want to say that this idea, you have to prove yourself. I think it's an incredibly fundamental American idea. You know, from, if you think 200 years ago, how people used to raise their kids, I don't think people were so afraid of saying, look, we have high expectations. We think you're amazing, but you know, you have responsibilities. We want you to be a moral person, and we want you to reach for the stars. You need to prove yourself. You're not just okay no matter what you do. So, you know, I think that's actually a very American way of looking at things, and that it wouldn't be bad to kind of move a little bit further back in that direction.
Let's go to the third trait that you identify in the triple package. I'll go to either Amy or Jed on this, and that is impulse control. I found this also very interesting. You identify this as the third trait among these successful groups.
Yeah, and it's very important. All three are really important. You got to have all three to have the triple package. I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of the famous marshmallow test conducted out in Stanford. This is like 30 years ago now. And what they did was they gave 3, 4, 5-year-old kids a marshmallow. And they said, you can go ahead and eat that marshmallow. But if you can wait 15 minutes, you'll get a second marshmallow. You'll have two to eat. Well, most of the kids ate the marshmallow, but about a third of them didn't. And then almost by mistake, the researchers tracked the kids about 30 years later. And to everybody's surprise, because they hadn't been expecting or testing for this, they found that the kids who waited were doing much better academically, much better. And then as they tracked them further, higher income, staying out of prison more, and again, better relationships too, interestingly enough. So a very well-documented finding. That's like one of the most important social psychology studies ever is that marshmallow test, and it's a test about impulse control. So basically, these triple package cultures get their members to sacrifice present satisfaction in exchange for trying to get goods and get achievement down the road. And that is the opposite of immediate gratification, and that's kind of what the impulse control thing is.
It sounds kind of limiting, though. And again, maybe anathema or against the grain of American culture, because it sounds, while I appreciate it, I think discipline is important, self-discipline, it sounds like it inhibits imagination, maybe, going with the flow until you find the right beat, so to speak. I'm thinking of entrepreneurs in America, people out in Silicon Valley, not unlike Steve Jobs, to bring the story back to him, Amy. Impulse control, it sounds kind of inhibiting and limiting.
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring up Steve Jobs, because he is famous for his almost compulsive self-discipline and impulse control. He was just very, very meticulous and very disciplined. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think you're right, though. If you think about one thing we were surprised at is when we looked at all these different groups. I mean, what do Nigerian Americans and Ghanaian Americans and Mormons have in common? We found that these groups all had a very different view of childhood than mainstream America, whereas most Americans see childhood as a time where you should be carefree and have fun. The truth is that these groups that are doing so well tend to view childhood more as almost a training period, you know, a time when you're preparing for the future, teaching your kids about responsibilities. And I think you might be right that it might be a little less fun, so there can be a cost to that. But it's also true, if you look at the people who are really doing well in Silicon Valley, it is stunning what percentage of them are either immigrants or the children of immigrants. If you look at Stanford in California, I think it must be something like 70% of those founders of startups are, many of them are Indian American, Chinese American, or from Russian American, British American, but they are immigrants or children of immigrants. And the trick is combining that sense of self-discipline and hard work, but maybe rejecting what your parents keep telling you to do, the very narrow things, and finding something that you're passionate about and can be creative about.
I want to speak to my listeners here for a moment. You've had a chance now to hear Amy Chua and her husband, Jed Rubenfeld, co-authors of The Triple Package, lay out these ideas, these theories, what they've found in their research when they looked at successful cultural groups in America, these traits. Is any of it ringing true with you? Does it resonate with you, with your own experience? Perhaps you come from an immigrant family. Perhaps you are part of one of these groups, Indian American, Chinese American. Perhaps you're from a Mormon family. Give us a ring. This is how you get in touch with Midday, 410-662-8780. Our toll-free long-distance number, good from anywhere in the country, is 866-661-9309. And the Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. So think about it. Amy and Jed, stay right there up at Yale. We'll come back and talk some more about this and hear what our listeners have to say about and does it resonate with any of their experiences? I would love to hear from them. Again, I think this is one of these topics. It makes people a little nervous maybe to talk about these things in generalities. It brings us to stereotypes. But I know I find this kind of interesting, a very different take on some of what we've heard about what makes constitutes success. What are the makings of success in America? 410-662-8780. Dan Rodrigues here on Midday. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Midday. Dan Rodrigues here. Amy Chua, our guest. She wrote The Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother a few years ago, an international bestseller. Now with her husband, Jeb Rubenfeld, who is an accomplished novelist, their book together, The Triple Package, How Three Unlikely Traits Explain the Rise and Fall of Cultural Groups in America. They're both law professors at Yale. This is really interesting. And Jed and Amy, I think I go to the immigrant experience a lot because that's the experience of my own family. So I wanted to pose this question to you. When we talk about these three traits, you got to have all three of them for this to work. Individually, they don't work. So superiority complex, sense of insecurity, and impulse control. does, in terms of immigrants, does it go away? I mean, we talked about this earlier, about the second and third generation. Can you lose these traits and get lazy? And if you're not conscious of them, or if you are conscious of losing them, can you get them back? That's a question for you. How do you like that question?
Well, you know, sociologists have been studying immigrant communities for, oh boy, almost 100 years. And yeah, the finding is quite remarkable that almost always success tends to decline and dissipate in the third generation. So you got a very remarkable steady pattern of second generation success. That is, second generation achieves the most success. And then there's decline starting to set in around the third generation. And a few factors combine to make that true. There's success itself erodes the foundations of, you know, you're less insecure, less reason for impulse control. America undermines the superiority complexes of these groups. So some, you know, this is a process that can be a great thing, not just a negative thing. So, you know, America also teaches these kids, you know what? Maybe you don't want to succeed the way your parents are trying to get you to succeed. You know what? Maybe you shouldn't measure success in terms of dollars or respectable occupations the way your parents did. Mm-hmm. So what gets picked up as a measurement of decline, okay, maybe it's, you could call it laziness. Maybe in some cases it's people not working as hard. That could definitely be true. But another part of that story is people are learning to decide for themselves what they, you know, how they want to live, what they want to live for. And that's something that we should all applaud, I think.
For example, immigrant groups. Immigrants are often not very civic. And this is not because they're bad people, but they've come from a foreign country, often countries that have very bad political systems. They don't like the government. So you'll see that immigrants who first get here are often very family-oriented. They just care about their kids' education. But they don't care about public service as much, community service. So that, picking up on Jed's point, when their kids and their grandkids, you know, a little bit more secure, they're not afraid they can't put food on the table. They aspire to greater values. They start having the leisure to think about other people, about helping others, about the public interest, and that's critically important to the national well-being, in addition to hard work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just bring it up because, you know, there are some folks in America who are not too happy about the immigrant picture here, as when it comes to undocumented or documented or otherwise. But, you know, I think our society is changing so quickly. And the way you describe this, is, it looks like, you know, we are the country continues to be the beneficiaries of immigrants who bring these traits to the United States. You've identified them. I never saw them this way before. But it certainly is interesting, and I see that there's a benefit to the society from it. Let's take some calls here for Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld, her husband and co-author of The Triple Package. Terry in Baltimore giving us a ring on Midday. Go right ahead, Terry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just tuned in, but the subject was of such interest to me. I wanted to share that I'm an American married to an immigrant, and we have kids that are now in undergraduate and graduate school, and they're doing well, but what our experience showed me was that when we came together and had kids and became parents, it became clear over time that I was coming out of a background of woman-directed families, and my husband comes out of a culture that's extremely patriarchal. He's from Iran, and the conflicts were, pretty severe, but over time, if you're able to see those things, then you can put them in their place, but...
Put them in their place, or what do you mean, Terry? Put them in their place. You mean balance them somehow?
Well, to get the perspective to understand that it's not whether or not or how much to discipline or how to discipline that you're arguing about. It's more like who's going to do it? Whose way is it going to be done? Because we're both in favor of disciplined children and really in favor of causing them to have internal discipline. But, you know, I just grew up that women raise the children.
Well, so how did you?
The fathers did that.
I'm curious.
You know, and laid down the law.
How did you work it out then, Terry? What's the bottom line then?
you know, I have to tell you, the whole thing that people tell you about present a united front here, kids, totally overrated, never going to work, and the parents are going to spend more time arguing about the United Front than they're ever going to spend focusing on their children. The United Front's not going to happen.
Let's hear from yourselves, thank you, undercutting each other. All right, Terry, thank you. It's a little bit off topic, but she did bring up that her husband is Iranian-American. Amy or Jed, you want to respond to that?
Oh, no. It would be fun to hear more questions. I'd love to hear more.
Okay.
You know, your audience tend to be very, very proud of their ethnic heritage. You know, they're an ancient civilization, so it would have been fun to hear more.
Let's go to Robert in Baltimore. Robert, thank you for calling.
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting show. I am curious. Amy and her husband's philosophy is very clear, and it reminds me a lot of what the Puritans were saying in early America, this idea of impulse control and, you know, moral education. I thought we tried that already, and it didn't work. So I'm kind of curious if they could comment on that.
America. Yeah, I do think so interesting. I think the American Puritan inheritance was part of what gave America the triple package at its foundation. The U.S. was born a triple package country. It had a high sense of its own manifest destiny exceptionalism, which continues today. It had the Puritan inheritance, which gave a kind of culture of impulse control. It had insecurity vis-a-vis the more powerful and aristocratic nations of Europe. And then there was a kind of, you know, more personal insecurity. Individuals, Alexander de Tocqueville famously observed in America, you know, had this longing to rise. Everybody wanted to prove themselves. So we really did have all these qualities right from the very beginning. What we're identifying, which seems like a set of immigrant qualities, these are American values through and through. Now, I think in the last 30, 40 years, something has happened in America. I think if we're going to be honest, there have been changes. I mean, one thing that happened was at the end of the Cold War, we emerged as the world's hyperpower without even a serious rival. And that kind of power and success can undermine insecurity. Then there was the economic boom of the 80s and 90s. Then there have been cultural developments, a move toward self-esteem, a move toward just feel good about yourself, a move toward immediate gratification. These, I think, have pulled America away from the triple package. You could almost say that by 2000, all we really had left of it was the superiority complex, which by itself is not a recipe for success, but more of a recipe for, you know, swagger and belligerence. Now, I'm going to disagree a little bit with the caller. I think, like, you know, the that marshmallow test that I was describing a few minutes ago, that has conclusively demonstrated, and that test has been replicated all over the world, that a degree of impulse control is extremely important to people in all kinds of metrics in life, in terms of doing well at school, doing well in income, staying out of college, staying out of drugs, having long-term stable relationships. So, you know, you can go too far. You can have a Puritan morality. Nobody's in favor of that. But some kind of discipline and impulse control, I think, is very important. But, you know, Dan, at some point, we really should talk about how the triple package applies to, you know, America's lower income groups and the tie in there. I'll bet a lot of people want to hear about that.
I have that note here to ask you about that before the end of this hour. I wanted to take a couple more calls, and then we'll get to that because that is pressing on me. Here's Dory in Annapolis. Dory, thank you. You're on with Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld.
Okay. Well, actually, the segue, being Puerto Rican, I think that we have a case of no self-identification. If you look stereotypic, you know, the brown skin, or if you're more European looking, well, that's how the overall culture treated you, or even as you treated yourself. And, you know, it's not politically correct to say, but Puerto Ricans who, you know, by birth, legally are American, you know, succumb to a lot of the, you know, just immediate gratification. And, you know, amongst this rivalry between Puerto Ricans and Cubans, seeing the Cubans come in and compete and you know, fight their way to, you know, to success. You know, amongst a lot of Puerto Ricans, the Cubans are known as the the Jewish Hispanics, because they have, you know, they have succeeded so well in business and education in so many other areas. They didn't have anything handed to them the way the Puerto Ricans by birth.
Interesting. So yeah. You see the Cubans, of course, the Cubans are mentioned in Amy and Jed's book as having access to the triple package, and she's making a distinction there from the Puerto Ricans. Very, very interesting.
I thought that the caller raised so many important points. First of all, Jed and I make very clear that the reason that some of America's poor groups became poor to begin with has nothing to do with culture of the triple package. America's poorest groups, whether we're talking about our inner cities or rural Appalachia, became poor because of history and the kind of discrimination that the caller mentioned. Centuries of slavery and exclusion and denials of opportunity. This makes it pretty hard to have a superiority complex if the whole society is stamping a badge of inferiority on you. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. But I also do want to stress that every one of these characteristics can be instilled in children, whatever background they come from. And I can't help but mentioning somebody we talk about in our book, and that is Justice Sonia Sotomayor. She's on the U.S. Supreme Court, and she came from a struggling Puerto Rican family. Her father was an alcoholic, as she writes in her very moving memoir. Her mother was not around. And what she said is that she was lucky that her grandmother instilled in her the sense of that she was destined for great things. So, you know, it's not always easy, but that even that one parent, that one adult figure can do that. And then she said that she had plenty of insecurity. She didn't need that. But she said that she was not a good student in grade school. But finally, in fifth grade, she went up to the best student in her fifth grade class and said, How are you a good student? What exactly do you do? And the student told her, she said, no, I want to know exactly. When you go home from school at 4, what do? And basically, Justice Sotomayor said she just copied that. She taught herself. And that my point there is, one of the most interesting things, exciting applications of our thesis is that educators, including inner city charter schools, have reached out to us and said, these three qualities are exactly what we are trying to instill in our underprivileged students. We're trying to give them a sense of exceptionality based on, wow, you've overcome these life challenges. Take pride, not in a certain group or a religion, but take pride in your own hard work and perseverance. More impulse control in the sense of, you know, more discipline, longer hours. And it's funny, you would think, wait, what do you mean by insecurity? But this is high expectations, which is you can do better. You can do even better than what you have now. You're not quite good enough yet. So it's a really complicated question. Of course some people face deeper challenges. Of course the world is not fair. We need to battle discrimination. But it's also not the case that there's nothing, you know, any individual family or can do at any moment.
I really want to emphasize that last point that Amy is making. You know, when we cite the example of Justice Sotomayor, the point there isn't, see how easy it is? If she can do it, anybody can do it. That's not our point. It's incredibly difficult. It's incredibly exceptional what Sotomayor did. You could have all the triple package qualities in the world. If your society betrays you, if your society doesn't give you opportunities, if it excludes you, it's not going to help. And Amy and I know that. It's on page 3 of our book. We need to end discrimination in this country. We need to level the economic playing field. The point of our book is there's something else too. Some kids are born with cultural advantages that others aren't being given, and that itself can be the result of history and exclusion, but we need to be leveling the cultural playing field as well.
Another call. This is Sanjay in Elkridge. Sanjay, you're on Midday with Amy and Jed.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
Good.
All right. Well, I just want to say, listening to the conversation about lunch break, the points that they make really reflect in what I've seen in other kind of successful second-generation Americans. I myself am Indian American, and I think I've seen all three of these traits show up in the way I was raised and the way a lot of people I know were raised.
Could you ask for me just talk a little bit about the insecurity part of it, the middle
trait,
the second trait?
I think the best way to reflect that is my mother always used to say, you have the ability and intelligence to do anything you want, but then you have to go out and accomplish it. So then as you get that sense of self, you also have the insecurity of now you have to go out and accomplish what you're capable of doing.
But for what reason? I mean, what motivates you to do that? Is it holding up family honor, the expectation of your parents?
I think it's both the expectation of your parents, and for me and a lot of people, I think in my community, when you have other high-achieving people or people who are held in esteem, who have become doctors, become lawyers, made a lot of those accomplishments, you want to go on and do those things. As I get older, though, and I think this is the point that they made, and I think about how I would raise my own children, I think it becomes a point of being able to say, I do want to accomplish those things and do that, but you don't want to have blind accomplishment. You also want to be happy and balance accomplishment with happiness. And I think that's where oftentimes that change happens with second to third generation Americans. I think it turns more towards happiness and not just accomplishment for the sake of accomplishment.
Sanjay, thank you very much for calling in. Another perspective on this, George in Annapolis with the Lebanese-American perspective. Hello, George.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much, Dan. Fascinating program, as you usually do, by the way.
Thank you.
And I was going just to endorse the author's theories. I certainly consistent with my own experience as a child growing up in New Jersey. But I wanted to make the point that I think in addition to these three essential elements that are outlined in their book, at least in my case, there was a fourth essential element that I think is worthy of consideration, and it is simply this. Every Sunday, growing up in New Jersey, my extended family got together in my grandmother's house, and I was exposed to conversations about business as a little boy that I didn't realize until I became an adult, infused in me a sense of what was normal. And it seemed absolutely normal that every American should start a business and run a business and create wealth that way. And to me, that was perhaps the most critical element in giving me the ambition that I have today.
So you were in... Okay, thank you, George. George was in the culture of thinking this way, that everybody could own... I guess that falls under superiority. That would fall under the first trait, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think so. A sense of exceptionality that, you know, look, we come from a people who can be successful. It's normal to be very entrepreneurial and have high success.
Amy, a question from Evelyn in Dundalk, who wants to know if you and your husband think that the triple package theory applies equally to men and women.
So interesting. This is what my students at Yale Law School are keep asking me, and it's again, one of the most exciting applications because people say it should be able to apply. Maybe we can think of it this way. Margaret Thatcher is a great example. She was the Prime Minister of England. And if you read biographies about her, you see that she, again, she had this big superiority complex from her parents that she could do great things. But she was very insecure because she was a grocer's daughter. She came from the middle class and she thought people looked down on her. But at the same time, she was a woman. And that she turned that sense of insecurity from being a woman and like how it combined with the superiority into this incredible drive. It was like, what? I am so much smarter than all these people. I know so much more than these fuddy-duddies, and they are not giving me a chance. They don't think that I can be a leader, and it just made her so driven. So I don't have all the answers, but I love the question. It's actually something that my students, my women students, ask me about, and we're going to start doing some research on it.
Hey, this has to be real quick. Rhonda calling in with the Mormon perspective. Rhonda, we're almost out of time. Can you make your comment quickly, please?
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. I think one of the things in summary is that Mormons, we're taught that we should get as much education as possible, and this would apply for men and women, even women that will choose to be stay-at-home mothers, but that no education is wasted. It is the one of the very few possessions, if you want to call it, that we could take with us in the next life.
Ah, that you'll always have with you, yes. And I saw a reference in the book elsewhere to the fact that if you're persecuted, if they take away your home, they take away your money, once you get an education, you'll always have that. We're going to close on that comment, so thank you, Ron. We got multiple perspectives here today. It was great. Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld, it was great to have you on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
Thanks
so
much.
Great. The Triple Package is the name of their books, folks. Hope you enjoyed our program. Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld joining us from Yale, where they are both law professors and co-authors of this book published by the Penguin Press. This is Dan Rodericks for our staff here at Midday. Thank you for tuning in today. Stay tuned for the news from NPR. and Hear It Now coming up after that. And then we'll see you again tomorrow for another edition of Midday.